Are you ready to update your flooring? Well, don't miss the Lowe's Floor event going on now through October 31st. Come in today and get free Stainmaster carpet installation with the purchase of any Stainmaster carpet and pad. Or check out tile and laminate flooring for only 68 cents per square foot. For these and more great values, check out the Lowe's Floor event now through October 31st. Lowe's, never stop improving. Offers valid through 10/31. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Good evening and welcome to Genia Bloggers Radio at Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Thomas McKenty, and it is Friday, September 16th, 2011. And I'm coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois. I am back home, sweet home Chicago, and this is our 35th episode of Genia Bloggers Radio. Again, we have a fantastic show for you tonight. Our show tonight is entitled Ancestors in Place, Genealogy, History, and Context. And our special guests include Jane Wilcox, who has her own show here on Blog Talk Radio. It is called Your Ancestors Want Their Stories to Be Told. And I'm looking forward to this because I was on Jane's show back in July and or June. I think it was July. And Jane is going to discuss why it is so important to understand your ancestors in the proper context and in their own history. In addition, we are going to talk with professional genealogist, author, and genealogy educator Lisa Alzo about the various tools you can use to incorporate history into your family history research and writing. So we're going to have a great show. I am really looking forward to it. We've got now, if you have not been listening to Blog Talk Radio before, let me fill you in on our little secret treehouse or clubhouse, as we call it here. Did you know that Genia Bloggers Radio has a chat board that goes along with this episode? And on the chat board, this is how you get there. Right now, there are almost 40 people there, and they are a lot of people you would know from the genealogy world. If you've been to conferences, if you're on Twitter, on Facebook, you'll know most of them. So this is how you get to the chat board. You log in to Blog Talk Radio either with your Facebook account. There's a button there that says Log In with Facebook. Or you can go ahead and set up a free account at Blog Talk Radio, and that takes all about 1 minute, and it is free. And then you go back to the episode, and you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page, and you will see appear there a chat room. And you can set up your alias, you can set up a name, you can be a lurker, you can be a participant, whatever you want to do. But it is a fun way to sort of extend your Genia Bloggers Radio experience. Very often, I will work off of the chat board and take questions for our guests and just otherwise talk genealogy with everyone on the chat board. And so it really, again, it's sort of double your pleasure, as the old gum commercial would say. So what is new? Well, what isn't new? We've got a great show tonight. It is 9:03 here. We're here every Friday at 9 o'clock Central, coming to you from Chicago, where many are cold, but few are frozen. Yes, our cold snap has struck. It did not even reach 60 degrees Fahrenheit today. And luckily, we are going to warm up over the weekend. But I tell you, I'm in sweats and, have not turned the heat on yet, because that is a sure sign of winter. I'm going to try and coast for a few more weeks. But I can see that the temperature is in the upper 40s here, right off of Lake Michigan when I wake up in the morning. So, and the autumnal equinox is, I think, next Friday, if I'm not mistaken. So, changes. And hello to all our friends in Australia and New Zealand. I have been talking to them. Haven't they been a great bunch this week? They've got tech-savvy genealogist meme that's going on. If you're not aware of it, go ahead and check it out at geniabloggers.com. There's a list of questions to show how involved you are with technology as a genealogist. That was started by Jill Ball down in Sydney, Australia, of the Genius, G-E-N-I-A-U-S, blog. And so she started that, and I've had a lot of fun with that. A lot of us have had a lot of fun with that. And it must be the good spring weather down there, because they are reversed in terms of our seasons. And yes, there is also rain in Texas. People are saying that that is a wonderful thing. So right now, I want to introduce our next guest. I want to read a little bit about here. Jane Wilcox, she's a member of APG, the Association of Professional Genealogists, and she also is a five-star rated expert on what used to be Ancestry.com's Expert Connect. So she was involved with Expert Connect. She's more known to me, at least, for being the host of the Forget Me Not Hour radio show, which is on AM 950 in Poughkeepsie, New York. And she also hosts Your Ancestors Want Their Stories to Be Told radio show on Blog Talk Radio. Jane has also, this is interesting, has consulted for the producers of the hit show CSI Crime Scene Investigation for a genealogy mystery TV pilot. So I'm going to, again, you know, here we always hope that our show doesn't, our switchboard here doesn't blow up when I try and make a call here. But we are going to call Jane and talk to her, and let's see what we get. And let's see, we are going to, Jane, is that you? Thomas McKenty here at Genia Bloggers Radio.
Hi, Thomas, it is Jane.
Hey, Jane, how are you? How are you doing tonight?
I'm very well. A little bit, little chilly here on the East Coast.
Yeah, what's your temperature over there? We can compare temperatures here.
I don't have the latest temperature. I've been told that it will be in the 40s tonight.
Wow, yeah. We have not had our first frost here on Lake Michigan, but I think out in the far west suburbs they did. I was told that they were all white one morning. It was nice and crunchy and frosty out there. So I think it's a sign that the seasons are changing. What do you think?
I think so, too.
Great. Well, listen,
it's a little early for the Midwest.
It is, you know, the thing is, I've been in the Midwest here for almost 7 years now, and, you know, it's a little bit, some years it's not until October, even mid-October, we won't get our first frost here in the city. But I remember growing up back where you are in upstate New York, heck, I can remember it snowing on Halloween, you know, and it's just the way it goes, you know, it's different every year. Well, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. I'm really excited. You and I have been planning this show and this topic for actually probably at least 2 months now. And so why don't we get started? Is that okay?
That's okay with me.
Wonderful. So now, you know, as genealogists, we deal with names and dates, and it's what I call, you know, two-dimensional genealogy. My goal has always been, as a genealogist, to have three-dimensional ancestors to sort of breathe life into them. Now, you say that you should get to know your ancestors. Now, what do you mean by that, and what are some ways that a genealogist, even a beginner or intermediate, can get to know their ancestors?
There are a lot of ways to get to know your ancestors. And I think the reason I say to get to know your ancestors is I'm a historian, and I've got a bachelor's degree in history. And I remember, you know, taking all of these courses, and history was so dry. And this was in the 70s, 80s. It's like history was dead. And it wasn't until I was introduced to the, like, novels and people writing about their experiences of history through memoirs and journals, that history really came to life. And
right.
So that's what I bring into my genealogy as well. I've been interested in genealogy since I was a kid. My grandmother was a genealogist for the National Daughters of the American Revolution. So I grew up with genealogy, and I've always been fascinated with people and who they were, what their lives were like. And so it just came natural to me to combine both my interest in history and my interest in genealogy and put the two together. And that's what I think of when I say, you know, to bring life to the ancestors, put them in the context of their times and look at to see what their lives were like, their own history, their politics, their religion, their education, their society, and what was life really like for them. And that's what brings history to life. And you can do that with your own family.
Right. A lot of people don't realize that. I mean, a lot of, you know, when I got started in genealogy, Jane, it took a little time for me to realize that there was history going, things that I learned in school, this is real life to my ancestors. It was all around them and that they were actually part of that history. And I'm hoping that is the hook that we can use to bring younger people into genealogy. So let me ask you, why don't we talk about, as a historian, you have access to probably some of the same record sets that we do as genealogists. So how would someone start getting to know their ancestors through research, through some record sets?
Well, the first thing is each person has a certain time and a certain location. You know, that's standard with genealogy. We want to know where they were born, when they were born, where they moved, when they moved, when they got married, where they got married. And so each person has a certain place and a certain time that we can pinpoint. And then the next step is to, start locally. Actually, you could do it two ways. You could start broader, you could start locally.
Right.
But locally really puts them in their own shoes, in their own society, their neighborhood, their community, their church. So there are histories that were written in the late 1800s. Some cities had a city history. There are county histories. And so when I'm researching for a particular client or my own branch of the family, once I have the person located, I want to check to see what was happening around them in their communities. And these local histories, the county histories are wonderful places to see what was happening, mostly in the late 1800s, and then people were looking backwards, you know, to the founding of the communities. So that's the first place to start. And then most of us have been exposed to the greater themes in history, U.S. history. For example, the Puritans coming to Massachusetts in the 1630s, and different parts of our history, the Civil War. And there are many books written about these different periods that also can help put the flesh on the bones, so to speak. And can give us more information about what the times were like that our ancestors were living in.
Right.
So you can approach it both from a local level or from a more generic, broader level.
Right. Now, I want to point out, you're right now in my home state of New York. Were you born in New York? Did you grow up in New York as well?
No, I grew up in your neck of the woods.
That's right.
Ohio.
We're sort of exchange students. I forgot about that. We sort of swapped places.
I grew up in Waukegan, Illinois.
Right, exactly, yeah. No, I did want to point out to our listeners that one advantage that New York State has, I want to point out the whole local town historian concept, which, you know, I think is wonderful. And you recently featured one of the town historians on your radio show. Is that correct?
I did just last week, the Kingston City Historian.
Right. And if people don't know it, in New York, I think it's mandated by law that each, I don't know at what level, whether it's city, town, I know my hometown of Liberty has a historian, the township does, but it's a great resource to go and get the history of that area. I just wanted to point that out to our listeners, that's what I love about New York history, is having that resource available. So you're saying that you know, in genealogy, if you do want to put that flesh on the bone, as we say, you can either start broadly or locally. So we're talking church. What about church or religious life? I mean, what would you find there, and how would that factor in?
Oh, that factors in tremendously. as I am doing research for clients, that's one of the first things I ask is do you know what religion your ancestors were? And so I've been exposed to, you know, almost all of the different faiths in my research. And so I'm looking to see, for example, you know, Baptists, which I'm working with in Putnam County in New York right now.
Right.
And that's... I found that particular location, that county, was mostly Baptist in the late 1700s. And so many times, you know, people would move to a certain location, and they had no choice but to join the church that was located there.
Right.
And Baptists have certain ways of keeping records that other denominations don't necessarily follow. And that the minister of the Baptist church was the one who kept the records. And when he moved, he took his records with him. So,
right.
You know, in many cases, not in all cases, but it's finding out how each denomination kept their records and finding the individuals, you know, who were attending the church at the particular time that your ancestor was attending church. So often these families intermarried, and so you've got, you know, so many connections happening, and you're able to extend your ancestors' community through the church, through the neighborhood, through the town.
Right, and getting that community relationship concept, you mentioned here neighborhood, town, church, ethnic associations. We all know the value of those newspapers and how, you know, 100-plus years ago, we look at them now as gossipy, you know, those little columns for each town, but those are a gold mine of information. Is that right?
They are, and they're just wonderful. I was doing research for my own book on my Wilcox family and was looking for my great-grandfather, Stephen Wilcox, and in the column of one of the Suffolk County newspapers, there he is getting turned over in his boat, you know, in one of the bays. And it's like, it just, you know, brought him to life for me, you know, that little incident out on the water and he got
right.
turned over.
Right, right. And I do also want to point out something that we've talked about a lot here on Genia Bloggers Radio. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term called the fan club, Friends, Associates, and Neighbors, FAN. And that was a term started by Elizabeth Shone Mills. And that goes back to collateral research and how helpful that can be. So I think, Jane, you might agree that it's good to know what was going on with the community at the time that your ancestors were there.
Yes, absolutely.
Great, wonderful. Now, one thing that I do want to bring up that you and I sort of have a set of talking points, and this is one that is important to me. Can we talk a little bit about the danger of presentism? Are you comfortable talking about that and how that can sometimes creep in to what we do when we place our ancestors in the context of history?
Will you repeat that again, the danger
of presentism. You know, the thing is, sometimes we look through a filter where we, you know, we see the way the women were treated back then and we think it's so horrible, but it really, you know, certain relationships, things like that, where it was commonplace at the time. You know, I know when I'm writing my family history, I need to make sure that, you know, it's not going through my present day filter.
Yes, and that is also part of understanding the history. And it's very important when you are doing research to understand the social customs, the norms, and that is also going to help you with your research as well. Understanding that, you know, what, you know, in the 1700s, for example, women who were married were not permitted to own land. Basically, a single woman, unmarried woman, could own land, or a widow could own land. But once she was married, the land ownership actually became her husband's, and she was, you know, had certain restrictions, limitations legally. So, you know, understanding that, and today we would be aghast, you know, to think that that would happen, and that is just understanding the context of that particular time period. Slavery is another example.
Right. And I think I think you're right, Jane. I think the thing is that when we put that presentism, that, you know, that filter aside, and we place our ancestors in that context, it also helps us understand where those records lie, where the clues are, because if you can start to think like your ancestor did back in the 1700s or 1800s, you have a better understanding of why the records are the way they are.
Sure. Sure. And I was doing, again, research for my book, and there's a wonderful woman that I discovered. Her name is Margaret Wilcoxon, born in the late 1600s, and she died in childbirth in 1714. And there were some records generated. She was a single mother. She had a child out of wedlock, and so I started doing research, thinking, okay, what were the laws of colonial Connecticut, 1714, that would have impacted her, because having a child out of wedlock was not acceptable at that point, and yet there were women, you know, many women who found themselves in that situation. So I was able to go to court records and then also land records, and was able to piece together the story of Margaret Wilcoxon, whose son did survive into adulthood and had married and had two children of his own. But in finding out what happened to this child, was very, you know, it's intriguing for me from a research perspective, but and then also learning about the customs of her society at the time.
Right, exactly. And now I did put up a link for the book that you're working on the Wilcoxon family biography. Now, how long did it take you to? Now, you did write that, is that correct? That is your book.
It is my book. I have been working on it, I think, since 2000. This is also, I talk about using your intuition. I go to Long Island every once in a while, which is where my dad's family, the Wilcox family, was most recently. And my great-grandfather is buried there. And so I was standing in front of his grave, and I literally heard the words, "Start the book," and these were words inside me, and I knew exactly what it meant. And I had been thinking about writing a book on my Wilcox family, in particular William Wilcoxon, who's my immigrant ancestor. And so I started writing this book, I started researching the book, and I started to apply all of these principles that we've been talking about tonight. And I really got to know, you know, who the Puritans were. William Wilcoxon and his wife Margaret and son John arrived in Boston in June of 1635. And I really dove into the research, found out what their religious beliefs were. They were part of the Puritan migration called the Great Migration.
Right.
They left England because of their religious beliefs and possibly economic other reasons as well. About 20,000 people left England between 1620 and 1640. They were among this group and going to New England. So I really wanted to find out what was life like for them, and you know, what was it like to walk in their shoes. So I did research again, their society, their politics, their religion, their education, occupation. He was a linen weaver, and which was a very common occupation trade in England. And then when he got here, he had land at his disposal, and he became a fairly prosperous farmer. So, taking a look at the different economic factors. So the book, instead of being a traditional genealogy, has really turned into a biography of William and Margaret Wilcoxon and their family.
Wow, wonderful. Well, listen, I'm glad to know, Jane, that your ancestors talked to you as well, that I'm not the only one. I wrote a piece for the Daily National this week called Why Genealogy? It's All About Me. And one of the things I talk about is that my ancestors do call to me, you know, especially when I'm working on record sets and everything. So I love hearing that I'm not the only one. And it sounds like you and I both probably have very similar ancestors. Not that I'm sure they probably somehow join at some point, because my ancestors, you know, my Crandalls up in Rhode Island that came to New York, same thing with the Great Migration, et cetera. So that's mm-hmm. very interesting. And I'm going to have to take a closer look at your Wilcoxon family biography. And I posted the link for our listeners out there. I wanted to let everyone know that we're here with Jane Wilcox and on Blog Talk Radio at Genia Bloggers Radio. And a question that popped up, Jane, on our chat board is, your show, Your Ancestors Want Their Stories to Be Told. When is that show held? When do you broadcast? What day? What time?
I do two shows per month. The first show is the first Wednesday of the month, and I do that locally in Poughkeepsie on WHVW 950 AM radio, and that has a more local, regional focus, New York, New England. And then I rebroadcast that show on Blog Talk Radio that night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time, and that is blogtalkradio.com/Jane E. Wilcox. And so that's the first Wednesday of the month. And then the third Wednesday of the month, also at 9 o'clock in the evening, Eastern Time, I have the second Blog Talk show, and that's a more national focus, bringing history and genealogy together.
Right.
And you can find the information, probably the best way to find it is to go to janeewilcox.com. JaneeWilcox.com, and you'll see a link to Forget Me Not Ancestry, which will take you right to the radio show page. Also
great.
The book page.
Wonderful.
The Wilcox book.
Wonderful. Well, believe it or not, Jane, we've got like 63 people on the chat board here at Genia Bloggers Radio. And they are, you know, besides having a good time, Donna Wendt, who is one of our listeners from Honolulu, Hawaii, wanted to know when your show was, because she thought it sounded interesting and she does want to listen. So thanks for providing that information. So why don't we continue on if you're up for it? This is a topic that is has a lot of information to explore in it. Why don't you talk a little bit about city directories and maps, if you don't mind?
Those are two of my favorite resources. Being here in New York, and a lot of my research takes me into New York City, and so I love those city directories. And how I use them is to piece together the location of the person I'm tracking. So, I dip into the city directory, say I know the person that lived in New York City between 1800 and 1840, and so I'll just dip in, say, 1830, and see if any of the names pop out at me. And then I start going backward and forward, and I'm able to often find other people who live at the same address with the same last name, so that gives me the clue that, okay, they're related somehow. And I just have a wonderful time with these city directories, and often I find the name stops in 1 year, and then I find widow so-and-so at the same address. So that gives me
exactly.
the clue that that the husband has died, and then I can go to the municipal archives in the city and see if I can find the death. So that it gives me an easier way to kind of narrow down the range of a death. It also gives me an idea of where, you know, they're living in the city, what their movement is. Some people may know this, that New York City traditionally during that period would, you know, entire segments of the population would be moving on May 1st.
Sure, I know.
Rent
Day. Wasn't it called Rent Day?
Exactly.
Yes.
I think so.
Yes.
So you would go in, you know, to a city directory, and then the next year find the person at an entirely different address.
Right.
And I would know, okay, they moved on May 1st that year.
Right.
So when you see that happen, you know that person didn't own land because
exactly.
they are moving frequently. So that's another clue. It also gives you an idea what church they attended. If you have an idea that maybe they were Methodist, which a lot of New York City people during the early 1800s had taken up Methodism. So locating where the Methodist church in the neighborhood is, which brings us to a map. New York City has a great Sanborn fire map.
Yep.
And you can go to these maps and see that the individual building where your ancestor lived maybe has four families in that particular building. And so you know that your ancestor, again, isn't living in isolation. The family's
mm-hmm.
living with three other families. Next door, maybe a building that has three families. Down the block is the Methodist church. Likely, if they are Methodist, that's the church that they attended. In the city directory, you find out what the occupation is. In this one case, again, the early 1800s, I was following this one man, and he was started out as a carpenter and then moved into some kind of, I don't remember what type of ship building occupation or something like that. I looked on the Sanborn map. Two blocks away is the shipyard down on the East River. So it's like, aha, that's
uh-huh.
where he must have worked.
Wonderful. One thing I do want to point out, I love the city directories as well. I use business directories, even social directories. Now, I'm not saying that my ancestors come from the 400 in New York, but sometimes you get these civic organizations like the Elks, like the Oddfellows, who have their own yearbook and directory. One thing, Jane, that I love to do is, are you a big fan of Google Maps? Have you used Google Maps at all? And to plot out? Yeah.
I have, yes.
Yeah, to plot out where your ancestors actually lived and worked. And you know, you can create your own map, and that's one good use of this. And it gives you, when you pull back that view, you think, oh, wow, this is where they are, this is where their church is. So I'm glad that you brought that up, the city directories, and it does. Those pieces of the puzzle all fit together eventually if you do the research. So now
yes.
let me get back to one thing that you pointed out. I do want to get back to, you said walking the land. This is in my notes here, and that you did go, I think it was in Long Island, you said, that you were walking the land of where one of your ancestors lived. Why is this important?
That is something that I have found really enhances my research. In particular, I really started doing this when I was doing research for the book, and I traveled to the various states where my Wilcox ancestors lived: Missouri, Minnesota, Long Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts, in particular. And first I had to find out where they lived, and using deeds and also maps,
mm-hmm.
and then actually going to the land itself and seeing where the house either was still standing or may have stood. And I just got the sense of what life would have been like for them in that certain location. Every piece of land has a different feel. Whether it's hilly or flat. In Missouri, they were there during the Civil War, and I drove out from the town and found out that the property was several miles outside of town, pretty isolated, and it was very flat, and I could just see, my ancestor's name was Orville. I could just see him working there, and taking care of. They had a nursery of fruit trees, and then imagining something that happened to him that was recorded by his brother during the Civil War. The various troops would come through Missouri, through his neck of the woods. The Confederate soldiers would raid his property. The Union soldiers would come through. They were German-speaking, didn't understand that my ancestor was a Union supporter. They would raid the property, for food and animals, to keep the troops supplied. And then the guerrillas, like Jesse James, would come through and raid the property. And they lost their farm during the Civil War because of that. And so I was able, I was standing right there on the property and just imagining what the life was like during the Civil War for him, and just imagining, how he must have felt having put all of this hard work into this wonderful piece of property and then losing it. So it really enhances, from my perspective, it enhances understanding the ancestors and the context of their times.
Great. And a little bit of a station identification here. I want to let everyone know you're listening to Genia Bloggers Radio here on Blog Talk Radio, and my guest is Jane E. Wilcox, who actually has her own show here entitled Your Ancestors Want Their Stories to Be Told, and we are talking about putting your ancestors in place, genealogy, history, and context. So why don't we continue on, Jane? Why don't you tell – I'm going to take a little bit of a break from our talking about the topic, but what have you got going on in the next few weeks and months in terms of radio shows, any plans on further books, articles, writing? What can you tell us? What's going on with Jane?
I have a lot going on. My guest next week, Wednesday, I think it's the 21st, 9 o'clock,
yes,
is the photo detective, Maureen Taylor.
Oh, wonderful.
She was on your show a few months ago, I think, talking about the Civil War photos.
Yes.
So she'll be on talking about how you can look at the clues in your photos and make some identifications. She'll be talking about her book on the Revolutionary War generation, the photos that have survived, which I find a fascinating topic.
Yes.
So lots of great information about your photos and using photos in your genealogy. And then in October, Megan Smolenyuk will be joining me in the Poughkeepsie show and talking about the Obama genealogies, and she did research on President Obama's most recent ancestor on his mom's side, and she instigated the president's trip to Moneygall, Ireland in May, so she'll be talking about that. And then really excited, my December show, I am going to have David Rambo, who is the producer of CSI, Crime Scene Investigations, on my show. Yep, I worked as a consultant for him and another producer. They were creating a fictional TV show, writing a script to pitch it to CBS. And so I did some consulting as a genealogist. And so he's going to be joining me talking about what behind the scenes in terms of creating a script for TV, talking about genealogy, which he's also very interested in. And we'll be talking a little bit about history. He's a playwright as well and has written some taken historical events and incorporated those into his plays, And then we'll also be talking about CSI. So that's the first Wednesday in December. And then the book is still a work in progress. I have a little bit to finish up on it, and so I hope to have that out at the beginning of the new year. And that, again, you can find that on thewilcoxbook.com or jamiewilcox.com, and then the Forget-Me-Not Ancestry link. And then a few articles are going to be written condensing that research, and those will be going to the American Genealogist. So that's kind of what's up for me in writing.
That's wonderful. Well, we are here talking with Jane Wilcox about ancestors in place, genealogy, history, and context. And one thing you mentioned here, historical events. Let me tell you what happened to me this week, Jane. I was watching, I don't know if you remember, Julie Harris, the actress, did the play Belle of Amherst about Emily Dickinson. And I was watching it the other night. We had rented it on Netflix. And it got me to think, and this is now me, the genealogist, I always think this way. Wow, let me see when my ancestors lived, when their lives overlapped, you know, with Emily Dickinson, what was going on at the time, etc. And I had forgotten that there was a major fire July 4th, 1879 in Amherst, where a big part of the city burned down. Do you find that you're always doing that like I am? When you hear about history, you're always thinking, okay, where were my ancestors? What were they doing?
I do, yes, and it seems like I always have the genealogist mind on, so yes, I can relate to that.
Right. Okay. Now, what kind of historical events should we look for? And one thing specifically, having recently we've gone through as a country what I keep calling the Great Recession, and I wonder what 50 or 100 years from now what history will say it did in terms of migration patterns. Another example, look at the Hurricane Katrina, what it did with migration patterns out of New Orleans. What kind of historical events, especially economic, famine, war, what do we look for, and how do we look for the effects of those on our ancestors?
That goes back to the motivation. And that's one thing that I'm always keeping a mind to is what is motivating the particular person that I'm researching. And I'm always asking questions, why did you do this? And that's
right.
Almost like using the intuition as well. It's like, I don't understand this. Why did you do this?
Or why did you wind up in Arizona? I had that with one ancestor.
Yeah.
Out of all the New Yorkers, why did you wind up in Arizona? Yeah.
Yeah. So I go back again and put the ancestors into the context of their times. What was happening? It may have been something local. It may have been something that affected the whole country, like the Civil War. Looking to see what was happening politically, especially in Europe, the Irish migration, German migration, often it had to do with wars. Like my Bohemian ancestors, who in the area that is now the Czech Republic, came to the U.S. in the 1870s, and the story in the family was that I guess it was the Habsburg. I'm not even sure right now. I think it's the Habsburg monarchy was conscripting men during that time, and my ancestor decided that he really didn't want to be part of that. So he brought his family to the U.S. in 1877. Looking at again what's happening politically, what's happening with the war. And with a more personal level, using an example from one of my clients, I did a lot of research for the family, German family in Albany, and I was able to take it back to 1848 when the family arrived in the U.S., found a passenger record, and then he hired a researcher in Germany to pick up that part of the research. And we found in the German records that the family was impoverished, and there were five particular family family groups that were pretty much suggested to leave their particular town in Germany. And this was part of the local authorities, you know, wanting, I guess, to expedite their departure.
Yes,
Yeah, we found that actually in the local German records. And so they were helped to get to the U.S., where the families ended up prospering. So, again, looking at what's happening politically, we can use famine, with the Irish example. I think most people know about the potato famine and how that was a mass exodus for the Irish in the late 1840s. So, again, putting the people in the context of their times, asking why did they migrate? Why did they do this?
Right, exactly. And I think this is a great topic for our short show tonight, and it's something that, you know, now that we need to all think about. Now, how can we, I guess you would say, get the word out? I mean, it's not necessarily a new concept for genealogists, but especially when beginning genealogists start out, I don't think that they're aware of putting their ancestors in context. What do you think we can do in the genealogy community to sort of drive this issue home?
I think it's, a lot of it is also being done at this point. All of the journals that I'm reading, the magazines, I think many of the authors, many of the professional genealogists have an eye to this already, and I really enjoy reading other people's articles to see how they have put people into the context of their times. So I think the more people, as you're starting out with in genealogy, the more that you're reading other people's work, I think you will become more proficient at that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And well, listen, I think we're gonna wrap up soon here. Anything else that you want to sort of tell our listeners in terms of what else they can do to put their ancestors in context, making sure that they're properly placed in history, especially if you're writing narrative, if you're doing more than just names and dates?
Sure. Another example is if your ancestor has left a will and if there's an inventory of the estate. I chuckle sometimes reading the different inventories, and I always pay attention to how many of something a person has. In a few examples, this was mid-1700s, one person had a wig in the estate inventory, and he was a more prominent man in his community, and I realized, you know, I had not run across somebody having a wig in his inventory before, and I thought this was, you know, it showed me his social station, you know, what he was doing in his community probably required that he have a wig, you know, that he was
right,
a little more socially prominent. So, those types of clues, spectacles are another item that I find in some of the inventories. This Margaret Wilcoxon that I talked about, who died in childbirth and had the birth out of wedlock, in her inventory, she had a red petticoat, she had a riding habit, and she had some kid gloves. And that was very unusual, again, 1714. And I think it's part of the story. I need to do a little more research to get the part of the story of who, I have an idea of who the father of the child was.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it may have been a doctor, and he would have had the money to possibly give her those gifts.
Those items, right.
Yeah. And again, that's just kind of a little inkling that I've got. I have not been able to prove that yet. I do have some more research to do. But it's looking at the their lives, their daily lives, what they were using, You know, what crops did they have that's listed in the inventories? Was it peas? Was it did they have flax? Maybe they were weavers. So using that to, again, add flesh to the bones.
Right. Now let's close on intuition. You brought up intuition. You know, is this the same as a hunch? I mean, what to you is intuition when you're doing historical or genealogical research?
It comes in a number of forms. There could be an aha moment. I think, you know, most people are going to be relating to these. You're in the middle of something, you know, you're totally in your head, you're analyzing, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I got it. You know, it's one of those things. Another one, I have them, in particular when I was writing the book, or working on the research of the book, I was in Vermont. My ancestor, who was there until 1834, 1800 to 1834, and he turned his house took it up, moved it back up the property, and turned it 90 degrees.
Huh.
And it was one of those times when I was asking Ebenezer, why did you do that?
Right.
It's just like he moved the front of the house away from the street, which was, you know, or the road, which was down the hill. And so I was standing on the property. It was a bed and breakfast at the time. And so I was standing on the property overlooking the hill. And I was told through some people who had done some research that he had exotic plants and ornamental plants that he had created a garden for himself. So I'm standing there, and I realize that I'm overlooking his garden. And it was like, oh, you moved your house so that you could see your garden better.
Right, right.
And it was one of those, like, oh, I've got it. And then this is the part that I still get goosebumps. When I got it, it's like, oh, you moved your garden so you could see, or your house so you could see your garden. There was a meteor in the sky, and
uh-huh.
And it's like, oh, okay, that was, again, you know, the kind of the intuition and my ancestors speaking to me.
Great, wonderful. Well, listen, Jane, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight. We are here at Blog Talk Radio, Genia Bloggers Radio, and our guest has been Jane E. Wilcox of the Your Ancestors Want Their Stories to Be Told radio show, also here on Blog Talk Radio. And Jane is calling in from where we're calling her in New York. And Jane, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, sure, and I wish you luck with your show. You have some great guests coming up. I do want to point out to our listeners, tune into Jane's show next Wednesday and I'm trying to remember what time. I think it's 8 o'clock Central, 9 o'clock Eastern on the 21st.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
And Maureen Taylor, the photo detective, will be on. And Maureen is a great guest. She's been here before, and a lot of us know her in the genealogy community. So I'm going to let you go and hit some news and then go on to our next guest. But I want to thank you for being on the show, Jane.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good
and
night.
You too.
Okay. Thank you. And that was Jane Wilcox calling in from New York, or we called her in New York, actually in my backyard where I grew up. So she's in the Hudson Valley area where I actually grew up. You are listening to Blog Talk Radio's Genia Bloggers Radio. It is 9:54 here Central Time in Chicago. Very chilly, relatively chilly, 52 degrees. I want to say a certain shout-out to two people tonight. Randy Seaver. Randy and Angel Linda are up in Madison, Wisconsin, where they are listening to us tonight, or at least Randy is. Randy's on the chat board. Also, I want to say hello to Audrey Collins. Audrey was our car guest, our driving guest, on the way back from Springfield, Illinois on Sunday, and we dropped her off downtown Chicago. She spent a few days here, said she got a nice sunburn from walking around downtown Chicago, and now she's in Toronto at a big conference up there. So I want to say hello to all of them and also everyone else who was at FGS 2011. We had a great time. I had a great time. I am still not fully recovered. I'm covered in terms of email, but still I'm kind of hobbling around here. It was actually a lot of work. We had, the official count is 2,048 attendees, 2,048. So almost 2,100 attendees at FGS 2011. And FGS 2012, Birmingham, Alabama, is going to be, I think, August 29th through September 1st. It is going to be a great conference next year. And I got to meet Yvonne Crumpler and Elizabeth Wells, who are the sweetest Southern ladies that you would ever want to meet, that are co-hosting this event next August and September. And I was educated on the proper way to say the word war, as in the War of the Rebellion. So it is pronounced with three syllables. It is pronounced WOWA, W-O-W-A. And I will never forget that, sitting there at breakfast one morning while we're having a meeting and hearing the term WOWA. And I had to ask what WOWA meant, because I was not understanding it. And now I just laugh every time I hear it, even just see the word war. So you are listening to Genia Bloggers Radio, as we said before. I do want to hop over to something. I want to hop over to Genia Press. And before we bring on Lisa Alzo at about 5 after the hour, we are going to talk to her. And she's going to tell us, actually talk about some practical tools that you can use to put your ancestors in place, in context. So a few things that are going on with Genia Press, geniapress.com. You know that NGS released some new videos. There are some public videos over on the NGS website and also on YouTube. They have one called Cousins with Leslie Anderson. They also have something she talks about. She's a natural storyteller, philosopher, and she is the lead editor of Virginia Slade Births Index over at the Alexandria Library in Alexandria, Virginia, and that's a free video. And then there's a set of members-only videos on the NGS website as well, so check that out. Big news today, if you don't know, today is actually Mexican Independence Day. This was noted. I do try and note all these things over at geniabloggers.com. I knew about this. But then Ancestry Today, Ancestry.com, released the 1930 Mexico National Census on their site. So that was in conjunction with the Mexican Independence Day, which is today, September 16th. So other things that are going on, this one caught me by surprise. There is now a World Family Tree app for Genie.com. Seems that a third-party provider created a smartphone app, an app for the iPhone, the iPod Touch, the iPad, and Android that will take Genie.com data and lets you sort of display it in different ways, pictures, documents, bookmarks, timelines, pedigree view, and I thought that was really interesting. Also, I caught late word of this today. Genie has come out with a new format, Genie Pro, Genie Plus, is what it's called over at Genie.com. Because of some of the changes that they've gone through recently, they're offering a discounted price off of the normal Genie Pro. They have something now called Genie Plus. I believe that's what it's called. And finally, Family Search did add a whole bunch of records, 11 new records collections, Canada, Chinese genealogies, with over 1.3 million images, and Hungarian Catholic Church records are there. Mexico, definitely a lot of civil registrations from different states in Mexico. California, San Mateo records are there. And a biggie for me here, Illinois Northern District Naturalization Index, a new index collection with almost 1.5 million records. So I do want to point that out on Genia Press. Go to geniapress.com if you want some of the latest news. So people on the chat board are saying that, yeah, that they spent most of the afternoon. Terry O'Connell, hey, out to you in the not far away from me here. She said she spent most of the afternoon on Family Search. And so, but you are here at Genia Bloggers Radio, 10 o'clock. We also want to go to Genia Webinars. And Genia Webinars is a great site started by our friend in genealogy, Dear Myrtle. Mert started this site up, and it has really been a blessing for the community. Communal space where you can find out more about webinars that are coming up. Some that are coming up is, I love this one, and Mert herself has one on Monday, September 19th, called It Isn't All on the Net, and Ain't That the Truth? And I think that's important that we get the word out, and thanks, Mert, for doing that webinar, and that is coming up on September 19th. This is another big one with Legacy Family Tree webinars. Mary and Pierre Louis from, I believe she's in Massachusetts, is going to talk about researching your Connecticut ancestors. Now, I know Marion as a house historian, and she has had some great posts over at Roots and Ramblings. Did you catch her one, this the one post she had this week? And I still can't get over this. Roots and Rambles is what it's called, rootsandrambles.blogspot.com. And the name of her post was, "And So She Risks Everything by Being Completely Honest." And it was a little bit, being a speaker myself, it was a little bit disturbing. And I guess she was ready to do a talk on deeds and probate. And two people, basically, they're graduates of the BU program. They one of them said, "Well, what are your qualifications for giving this talk?" And it may have been said innocently, and sometimes, you know, things go through our filter a certain way. And it may have been just one of those things that just sort of that came out. But there's a long discussion, a lot of comments. I think the comments are up to 45 comments. So go ahead and check it out at rootsandrambles.blogspot.com. It was, you know, there is a debate. I think credentials have their place, but there are many good qualified speakers, many of whom were at FGS last week, who did a phenomenal job and don't have little letters after their name. They come from many, many years of working in their niche, working on what they do. So I do want to give kudos out to Marion for starting that discussion and being honest about it. And she does have a webinar coming up on Wednesday, September 21st. And guess who also has a webinar coming up? I do. 7 o'clock. It is 6 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central. I am teaching Illinois Genealogy Crash Course. Find Your Land of Lincoln Ancestors for Family Tree University. So go ahead and check that out over at Genia Webinars. And Mert has quite a few. She has a lot of Mondays scheduled coming up, Monday, September 26th, one called A Few Good Sites. Also, October 3rd, Type It Once. And so there are great webinars coming up. Check them out at geniawebinars.com. So what else can we talk about here? One thing that I do want to note is last week at Genia Bloggers, I was unable to post the new genealogy blogs for the week, and that was because of the FGS conference, so I apologize. What we will bring you, what I will bring you this week, is 25 new genealogy blogs. 25 newly discovered blogs will come out tomorrow morning. I'm going to finish that post tonight, and there are some great ones. I have to say that I have never seen so many blogs that start with the word my, and I think that is the running theme for tomorrow's post. I think that there are probably about 7 or 8 of those 25 blogs that have the word, they start with the word my. I don't know what it was, something in the water, but it was something. So we are going to go ahead and patch in Lisa also here, and I'm going to try and find her here on my Skype, and it is time to see if I can add her to the call here, and so I have to do it a certain way on Skype, otherwise it's not going to work with me. So let's see if we can add her to the call and talk about some tools that you can use to put your ancestors in context and in history. And Lisa, are you there?
I'm here.
So how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you,
wonderful.
Thomas?
Wonderful. Good. Well, I've seen you on the chat board. I know we're keeping you up late. You're over in Ithaca, New York. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Wonderful. Well, I know it's a little bit after 11 there, and maybe past your bedtime, but I appreciate having you on the show. And everyone on the chat board says hello to Lisa. And let me also say that it was a pleasure to see you at FGS last week. What did you think of FGS?
I loved FGS. I thought that everyone involved, the organizers, the publicity people, did a phenomenal job. It was just a wonderful conference.
Yeah, thank you. And kudos go out to the entire volunteer team at Illinois State Genealogical Society, as well as the FGS volunteers. And we also, just so you know, Carol McCarty, I want to give kudos to her. She's the ISGS past president. She recruited a lot of the local senior citizen volunteers who did a lot of, you know, the room monitors or the doors or things like that. And so it was a team effort, and I'm glad you had a good time, Lisa. So listen, tonight's theme is Ancestors in Place, Genealogy, History, and Context. What can you tell us in terms of some tools? You know, we all know that your big focus is writing your family history, writing the story. Now, when you're writing that story, you want to put your ancestors in history, in context. What kind of tools do you recommend people use?
Well, when I gave the talk at FGS last week, I used four specific examples. One was writing from documents. One was writing from photographs. Another is writing from oral history interviews. And a fourth one was using timelines, which is something I really like to use in my writing. I think that is one excellent way to put your ancestors in the historical context.
Wonderful. Now, are there timeline programs that you use? I know that I have my favorites. What's out there on the web in terms of timelines?
Well, I think today you can find timeline features in pretty much any genealogical software program. I know all the biggies have timeline features, you know, Roots Magic and Legacy and Family Tree Maker. Also, there's a program, Gene Lines by Progeny, that you can buy that's specifically for timelines. But there are some free ones out there, like rtimelines.com or TimeToast. So you can find some online as well.
Great, wonderful. And what else do you recommend? I mean, what do you use? We want to know what Lisa uses, you know, in terms of maybe looking up historical events, et cetera.
Well, I've dabbled in all of those programs, actually. And, you know, sometimes I like the online ones, like the TimeToast or the Art Timelines, because it's quick and it's right there on the web. Sometimes I do like to go to my Gene Lines when I'm writing about a particular branch in my family or working on a specific project, because it gives more options for me. So I remember back when I started doing genealogy 20-some years ago, and I remember doing a timeline when I was working on my thesis, which ended up being my book, Three Slovak Women. And I remember doing it on poster board, because I didn't have the fancy software programs. And I still have that huge poster board that it was a handwritten timeline. And boy, things have changed since then. One of the other forms of timelines that I really like to use, but unfortunately it's not there anymore, is the Google News. I really liked being able to have the timeline feature with the Google News archive, and I'm kind of bummed.
It's gone. Yeah,
yeah.
It really depressed me. I turned around it just was weird. Now, I know that Fold 3, which used to be called Footnote, have you ever done one of those memorial pages? They build in a timeline as well. Have you seen that?
Yes, I've used that. I have some pages for a few of my ancestors, and I really like that. I like to use that as an example, that if you do a page and you plug in all the dates and the key information, it does that nice little timeline, and I really, really hope that they will keep those pages.
Yeah.
Because I love those pages.
Yeah, good. And now, the thing is, when I was talking to Jane as well, and maybe if we can veer off a little bit, what do you have any tips for making sure that you keep your ancestors in the historical period and you don't start putting your filter and your influence into the writing? Do you know what I'm talking about in terms of presentism? What do you think about that? I mean, what can someone do to prevent that?
I think, definitely, having the timeline is good, and also doing a lot of the research, as Jane was talking about, and really getting familiar with that time period and sort of absorbing yourself in it. And I write from notes and from organization, and I like to use other tools too. I don't know, a lot of people use Evernote, and I know you did an Explorinar on that, but I also use a tool called Scrivener, which is by Literature and Latte, and you can do like little note cards on your computer, and you can organize things, and I think that helps me because then I can put key points of the time period, things that were going on. Like, say, if I'm writing something during the Great Depression that takes place during the Great Depression, I can put key events or key highlights or key points on there as I'm building my chapters. And I think that helps me to kind of stay focused in the context. And that's the way I approach it.
Great. Now, Scrivener, I think it originally started out for the Mac. It looks like I have the link up here as well. It's at literatureandlatte.com. They do have a Windows version that's in a public beta. Now, are you on Mac or are you on a Windows computer?
I actually use both. I have a Mac at work and I have an iPad now, but I also have a Windows computer at home. So I actually have both versions. I have the Mac version, and there's some subtle differences. And the beta version is kind of buggy for Windows right now, but I have used it, and I'm just really getting more acquainted with it now. But I think it's a good tool, especially if you're doing writing of longer narratives, but it even works for shorter narratives, and you can do a lot with it, and so I really enjoy using it.
Wow, that's wonderful, and kind of funny. I have a friend whose wife writes romance novels, historical romance novels, and she confessed to me that she uses genealogy software to keep track of all her characters. And that's what she does.
Absolutely.
And I never even thought about it, but it does make sense. I mean, you're mapping out the history and the genealogy of, even if they are fictional characters, that a database software would come in handy. So it's kind of funny that I never even thought of that until she mentioned it, that you could do that. So what other programs do you use? So we've listed like TimeToast, we've listed like Scrivener, Evernote. Anything else in Lisa's research toolbox that you would use?
I also like, since I use Roots Magic software, I like their Personal Historian, and I believe they're working on a new version that's going to be coming out, I believe, soon. And that's another writing jogging software that you can use to help organize your stories and your history. So I like that as well.
Now, Personal Historian, doesn't that work on a series almost like prompts, like what we do over at Genia Bloggers, but it's more related to your personal life? I know that we bought a copy for my father-in-law who fought in the Korean conflict, and he said, I want to sit down. He's turning 80 next month, and he said, I want to sit down, and I want to write what I went through in the Korean conflict. And so we got him a copy of that, and he loves it. It's easy to use, right? And great, wonderful, wonderful. And what else? Anything else we can talk about? Any tools, any gadgets? Let's say when you go out on a historical research trip, I'm not talking to archives or library, maybe you're a cemetery or historical site. Is there anything you do to capture images or capture a feel for that historical place?
Well, I always make sure I have, of course, my digital camera. Now I have one of those flip video cameras too. So I make sure that I get everything. I mean, I try to, get some shots of the town, and if I can talk to some people, then if I have the ability to record conversations or record interviews. I can do that as well. I haven't done so much of that lately because I've just been too busy to do it, but I really, I'm always very, very conscious of that when I go to different places to make sure that I have my all of my gadgets that I need to significantly record everything and put everything down either in the iPad or on the flip video. And I one of the other things I love with the mobile genealogy now is the apps. And so like you can get the Dragon dictation software.
Sure.
There's a little free app for the iPad now, and you can use it on. On different gadgets, and so I like that as well because that's very useful.
Wonderful. Now, a few of our listeners that are on the chat board wanted me to mention, and I will be mentioning this new blog tomorrow with that list of 25 new genealogy blogs, The Catholic Gene. What is this all about?
Ah, yes, The Catholic Gene. Donna Poinkowski, who writes What's Past is Prologue, this was her brainchild, and so there are a group of us bloggers out there who were raised Catholic, and we're getting together to write a series of posts on all things Catholic, from records to recollections to going to Catholic school. I went to 12 years of Catholic school, and I also my aunt was a Roman Catholic nun. So I have a lot of material to write about.
Okay, so I have to ask you, because I went to Catholic school as well. Now, did you roll your skirt up as soon as you got out of school?
Oh, of course.
Okay, and if people don't know, why don't you describe what we're talking about if people don't know what we're talking about?
Oh, you had to have, especially if you were wearing uniforms, you couldn't show, above the knee. It had to be a certain length, and everything was exact, but when you got out of school, then all bets were off.
So you would roll it up at the waist under your belt, and I remember the sisters, the nuns would make the girls kneel down, and your skirt had to touch the ground. If you knelt down and your skirt did not touch the ground, basically you were kept after school,
Absolutely.
The other thing is they would not let the girls wear Mary Jane shoes, and you know why. Do you know why?
I actually don't know why.
Well, the Mary Jane shoes were patent leather, and they reflected, and boys would sit there and look at the shoes and watch the reflection. And so, in fact, there's a very funny play called Do Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? It's all about Catholic school.
That's so funny.
And,
I guess my mother made sure that I didn't have any of the things that broke the laws, right?
Exactly,
She made sure I towed the line.
Yeah. Well, this is wonderful. And I just posted the link. It's at catholicgene.wordpress.com. It's called The Catholic Gene, Exploring Our Catholic Family History. Go ahead.
There's some great bloggers on there, Craig Manson, Steve Danko, Cherie Fenley, Joshua, Seal Jensen, and many more. So great colleagues there on Catholic Gene.
Right. There's some great pictures here. And we all come, even though we all come from different parts of the country, Philadelphia, Detroit, et cetera, I think there's some common thread. I bet you there was some element that was always the same. From school to school, from parish to parish. So I think that's wonderful, and I congratulate you and everyone else, and Donna especially, for getting this off the ground. I think it's going to be a great, great place, and I'd love to see it turn into an online magazine, if you ask me. I think you guys have enough content, like the Graveyard Rabbits, to do that.
That could be in the future. It might be a possibility. I'm really excited, and I probably won't have any posts up there till the end of October because I'm just really, really busy right now. But I do have quite a few that I want to contribute. So I'm looking forward to it.
Great, wonderful. And now I do want to talk a little bit about what's coming up with you. I always like to do that with the guests. Make sure that they can get the word out on what's going on. You have a new class for Family Tree University, is that correct?
Right, it's on Hungarian genealogy. It's called Hungarian Genealogy 101, so it's the basics on how to do research in Hungary, because I've done extensive research there because my ancestors were Slovak, and of course Slovakia was under the Austro-Hungarian Empire, so I am familiar with the Hungarian records, and so they asked me to develop that course.
Great. And I forgot to mention, and I don't know why I didn't see it here on the webinar calendar, it looks like you're doing a webinar on Wednesday, Wednesday night for Southern California Genealogical Society on the 21st. Is that right?
That's correct. It's 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, I believe. And
right.
It's on immigrant cluster communities, past, present, and future. And I gave that talk at FGS. So if you missed it at FGS and you want to catch it, you can sign up to hear it on their webinar.
Great. And and then I'm going to skip over here. You've got the Czechoslovak Genealogical Society International Conference, better known as what, CGSIC, in St. Louis, the end of October, and you're giving a lot of talks there.
Yes, and they have their conference every 2 years, and so it's always a good build-up, and they do it in different places every rotation. And I've never been to St. Louis, so I'm looking forward to that. And what's good about this conference is if you have Czech and Slovak roots, I encourage you to go to the website and look at the information on the conference. But they are bringing over speakers, researchers from the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So these are the people that are immersed there, that know the archives, know the languages, can really give you some one-on-one assistance, and they're great folks. I know both of the researchers that are coming, and they're so helpful, and I'm really looking forward to that conference. And
great.
Then, of course, Roots Tech in February, I'm going to be speaking there, but they haven't finalized all the topics yet.
Right, and I'll be speaking at Roots Tech. I know that I have two talks that I submitted were accepted. I also might be working on something with wikitree.com, doing some type of presentation on wikis and genealogy. And so I'm looking forward to that. And finally, I wanted to end with Ancestry Day in, I guess, is it in Exeter or is
yeah.
one of the suburbs of Philadelphia?
Right, it's in Exton. And that's
Exton,
gonna be,
that's what it is. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be November 5th, Saturday.
Right.
And looking forward to that. Lou Zooks will be there and Juliana Smith and Kurt Witcher. And it's just going to be a really great day. Michael Haight will be there.
Great.
And so I'm really looking forward to it. It sounds like a great lineup.
Wonderful. Well, listen, Lisa, I want to thank you for being on the show, giving us some ideas on what actual tools we can use for putting our ancestors in the proper history and context of their times. And thank you for being on the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Thomas. Have a good night.
Have a good night. And that was Lisa also, better known as the Accidental Genealogist, calling in from the Finger Lakes area of New York. I bet you it's cold up there in Ithaca. And that is where Lisa's originally from, Duquesne, Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. And she's a good friend of mine and a colleague and a lady that knows her stuff. Very popular speaker. I can tell you again, anytime that I'm at an event where Lisa is speaking, I know that many of her classes will be standing room only, or not standing room only, because that would violate your fire marshal code, your fire code, but they are packed. They are full house. And so I want to thank Lisa for being on the show tonight. We have let's check the clock here, about 7 minutes left at Genia Bloggers Radio. It is nice to be back home. I want to say thank you to everyone that I ran into at FGS. Even if I didn't have much time to spend with you, it was a lot of work. I actually gave 5 presentations while I was there, plus my duties as National Publicity Chair and working at the Media Hub, and also you wouldn't believe meetings every night, breakfast every morning at 7 a.m. with one group or another. So the conference really just wore me out. Finally back to a constant sleep pattern, something a little bit consistent. So let me know what's going on. I'm going to check the call board here. No one's calling in. You can call in the next 5 minutes if you want at 213-286-7000. 888-346-6709. That number is always open here at Genia Bloggers Radio. And we will be back next week. Let me tell you a little bit about next week. Next week, it will be our show on the 23rd of September, Friday, at 9 o'clock Central. And guess who we're going to have as a guest? Michael Ketchin of 1000 Memories, 1000memories.com. And this is the name of the show. This is a pretty neat title for the show. Genealogists Bore Their Families, What You Can Do About It. Now, the title again, Genealogists Bore Their Families, What You Can Do About It. We all know this, don't we? Those of us that have been doing genealogy and family history for a while, we sure do know that. We pull out the family tree charts, those Annentafels, and we sort of say, you know, this is your fifth cousin six times removed, and the eyes glaze over. People run the other direction. So we are going to have Michael Ketchin on from 1000memories.com, a fairly new venture. I think they've been on the scene for about a little bit over a year, but they are working to reach out to the genealogy community, especially social media and blogging. And they did host a breakfast panel at FGS with about 70 people. So they will be on, Michael will be on, maybe Jonathan Good will be on with him as well. And also I'll see if we can get another guest or two to contribute to that line of conversation. So also I want to let you know that we are doing a after party tonight at Outloud.fm. So Outloud.fm, and if you sign in with Facebook, you go to sign in with Facebook and then go to the room that is called Genealogy with a lowercase g. And what's going to happen is you are going to see many people that are in there, and we are going to be playing tunes from the 70s, the 1970s this evening. So you want to migrate over there. There is a chat room over at outloud.fm/genealogy. One word of caution, we are hearing that you have to sign in. You should sign in with Facebook. But also we're hearing that OutLoud works better if you're using Firefox or Chrome. Does not behave very well for Mac. Not for Mac. I mean, for certain Windows users, especially those with Internet, Internet Explorer, maybe a later version of Internet Explorer. So right now, as we talk, I am going to fire up my hard drive here. I do have a external hard drive with about 200 gig of music, and that's what we're going to be playing. We're going to be – you can actually play your own music there. You sort of drag it over to the board at outloud.fm, and so we will be posting more about that if you want to migrate over there shortly. And so everything from Mac Davis – remember Mac Davis, Freddie Fender. I'm looking at some of the people here on my list. Gilbert O'Sullivan, and who can forget Terry Jacks and Seasons in the Sun. Disco Duck, David Soul, Tommy James, all those people you remember. So we've got some people here, and this is Thomas McKenty, Genia Bloggers Radio. Who's on the line?
Hi, this is Jared Nielsen.
Hey, Jared, how are you? Thomas McKenty with Genia Bloggers Radio. How are you enjoying the show tonight?
It's my first time. Really enjoying it. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Good. Where are you calling in from?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Wonderful. Congratulations. Good. Well, listen, anything you want to mention? We've only got about 2 minutes left, so you're going to have to keep it short.
I've got a fast question. My wife's ancestry dates back to Czechoslovakia, and you kind of piqued my interest. Her line goes dead right in a village called Lehocky, L-E-H-O-C-Y, and I just really don't know where to go. So I don't know what that was at the time of the German occupation where the borders of Czechoslovakia were shrinking, and I just need some pointers on where to go.
Good. Well, hopefully we can putting this out on the air will help. I think I saw you post it in the chat room as well. I may actually ask Lisa also to sort of get involved on the chat board. If you want, Jared, why don't you email me at geniabloggers@gmail.com, and then I can see what kind of resources I can find for you. How does that sound?
That's fantastic.
Wonderful. Perfect. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go. I've got to wrap up the show, and they are telling me, they're giving me the hook here in 90 seconds. But thanks for listening. And again, email me at geniabloggers@gmail.com, and we'll try and find some Czech and Slovak resources for you to solve that brick wall. How does that sound?
Great show. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Jared. And that was Jared calling in from Jacksonville, Florida. So we really only have about a minute left here. Join us next week at 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Eastern, at Genia Bloggers Radio. We will be doing a show called Genealogists Bore Their Families, What You Can Do About It, with Michael Katchen of 1000memories.com. We are here every week, and I thank you for being on the show. I want to thank our guests, Jane Wilcox, from the Blog Talk Radio show, Your Ancestors Want Their Stories to Be Told. And also my good friend and colleague, Lisa Alzo, calling in from Ithaca. I've got about 20 seconds left. Listen, hang out with us over at outloud.fm tonight. We're going to be playing some music over there. I'm going to be dropping some music in right now. Have a good night. Have a great week. Enjoy your genealogy, and we'll talk to you next week.